I'm Katie Anderson with WBOI News. It's time for part two of Sean Beter's interview with astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson, who visits Fort Wayne as part of IPFW's Omnibus Lecture Series October 21st. In this year's reboot of Carl Sagan's Cosmos series, Tyson describes the first of several encounters he had with Sagan that helped shape his life. Tyson was a bright high school student being recruited by Cornell University, and school administrators had asked Sagan to write him a letter encouraging Tyson to visit. He says he couldn't believe it.
Where did this even come from? Why would he take that energy to do this? He'd already been on The Tonight Show and had best-selling books, hadn't done Cosmos yet, but he was already famous. And so he met me out in the snow, and we went in, and he showed me the lab and signed a book to me. And the point is, it is emblematic of science being this continuous chain from searcher to teacher to student back to searcher again, searcher of cosmic truths, and this passing of a torch. And so that was a symbol of science as an enterprise.
In this edition of Cosmos, there's kind of a distinct emotional fondness for the Voyager spacecraft that comes up again and again through the series. But, you know, Voyager is not taking photos anymore. It's lost a lot of its functionality. It's old technology. Why was such a big deal made about Voyager in the series? You know, what does it mean to us now?
That's a great question. So a couple of things. The original Cosmos just missed Voyager. So Voyager was launched in the late 1970s, and all of his great science was conducted in the 80s. And then there was this famous pale blue dot image that was taken in the 90s. So none of that ended up in the original Cosmos. And Voyager also made banner headlines when it crossed the boundary of the solar system to enter interstellar space. So the Voyager is still there in the back of our sort of soul of curiosity as the farthest piece of hardware we have ever sent anywhere. So it's one thing to think of its scientific utility as having been played out mostly as your tour guide of the solar system from the 1980s. But it's a whole other way to think about it as this emissary of who we are and what we were at the time that record was assembled. And so it added an emotional, social, cultural dimension to our storytelling that, in our judgment, greatly can magnify any other science that we convey.
What is the next frontier? And this is kind of the blank check question, you know. What do you want to see coming up next? Should we be sending out more Voyagers? Would you like to see us heading out to Mars? I mean, if you had your druthers, you know, what would be priority one for NASA, for the international community right now?
So I think if I were like Pope of NASA, you'd built a suite of launch vehicles that can have the capacity to visit many different kinds of objects at very different distances over different lengths of missions. So there might be scientific reasons to go to Mars, and you might want to send tourists to the near side of the moon or send an artist colony to the far side of the moon. You might want to mine natural resources on asteroids. You might want to lasso a comet and bring it to Mars so you can melt water onto its surface and create lakes. Oh, by the way, if you have the power to lasso a comet, there's one headed directly for us. Why don't you like nudge that over to the left a little bit so that we don't go extinct? And this will have us all looking up every night, wondering, oh, is that where Cousin Ernie is? Or Aunt Betsy? They're up there. They're on their honeymoon. They're on wherever. The sky becomes something to reach for rather than something to not look at because you're distracted because you might step in something in the street.
This might sound a little abstract, but...
Wait. I study the universe, and you're going to tell me that a question you're going to ask me might seem abstract? I'm good with it. Just go for it. I'm all there. Okay.
Well, okay. When you look up, from your vantage point here on Earth, when you look up, what do you see? What is your perception of the cosmos from where we stand on this little marble?
Okay. So when I look up, I see tall buildings because I live in Manhattan.
Okay. Let's say you're in an open field somewhere or on top of the building, away from light pollution. When you look up, what do you see?
I look up and I notice the stars. I trace out the familiar constellations from that have been put up, you know, that have been traced out from since the times of the Greeks and Romans and Chaldeans and Arabs. When I look up, I commune through time with others who have looked up before me. That's what I do. I think about others who have looked up and wondered, what is that object? And then others who have developed methods and tools to figure out what that object is. And now that opens up other questions that the next generation pose and then answer. I distinguish stars from planets, from the Milky Way itself. I wait for the next meteor that streaks across the sky. If there's some phenomenon going on, a crescent moon juxtaposed with the brilliant Venus, or is there twilight from the setting sun, or morning twilight, dawn from the rising sun? So I'm noticing all of this about the night sky. So for me, the night sky is a quiet, busy place where the laws of physics are manifesting minute by minute, and as objects move, choreographed by the forces of gravity. That's what happens in my head when I look up in the night sky.